Well, next to massive Russian strikes in Ukraine, Kyiv hit emergency power cuts throughout the country, maritime infrastructure targeted too in Odessa. This follows the killing of a Russian general in a car bomb attack in Moscow, and on the back of peace talks in Florida. The Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky has said he expects a report this morning on those talks, which include security guarantees and an economic recovery plan.
Today, our negotiation team is already returning after meetings in America with representatives of President Trump. On Tuesday morning, I expect a full report on the prepared documents. A lot has been worked on, primarily documents on security guarantees, as well as the 20 points of the main document, the basic framework discussed by the Ukrainian and American delegations.
Siobhan O'Grady, Ukraine bureau chief with the Washington Post, is with us now. Strikes overnight in Ukraine, what's been the impact?
Well, so far, definitely power outages are continuing. My power was supposed to come back on about an hour ago at my apartment based on the schedule from the day before. We're already experiencing extreme rolling blackouts of power cuts up to 12 or more hours per day. And we're all really relying on those schedules to stay accurate so that we can plan when to charge up our devices and get some work done. And today, the power just didn't come back. So we're waiting still. I'm still having alerts pop up on my phone that Kyiv specifically is under increased air threat right now. So it's possible still that we could have another missile enter Kyiv airspace. Even this morning, as I look out my window, I see a lot of people walking on the streets. There's traffic. So definitely hope that there's not another major strike with so much traffic outside.
Well, you described traffic and people walking on the streets, but there have been air raid shelter alerts. Are people going to those shelters, or is this very much part of everyday life now, although it's a massive attack?
I think, unfortunately, once the working day starts, people still just get up and have to carry on with their lives. I know that I slept on the floor last night in between two walls, as is advised in case of strikes that break your windows. I know a lot of other people slept in metro stations and in shelters, but once the sun rises and people have to get to work, then they do just have to carry on. Kids have to go to school and people are out walking their dogs, including my husband who left with our dog despite the air raid alerts. So yeah, you wouldn't know from looking out the window, but you know, at any moment something could happen and it's definitely quite scary.
And Poland scrambled fighter jets too. Why the urgency?
I think that Poland is trying to show that they are prepared to respond in case something once again crosses into their airspace. And so thus far, we are still waiting to see exactly what was hit. Ukraine often will take some time, especially when it's critical energy infrastructure, to acknowledge exactly what the damage was, because they don't want to give Russia time to adjust their missiles and retarget something in case something was not, in fact, properly hit. So the expectation is, of course, that missiles were flying across Western Ukraine, as were Shahed drones, and that they were targeting energy infrastructure in the West, that Poland scrambled those jets just as a precaution to protect its own airspace. Unfortunately, Ukraine does not have any air support in terms of its European partners. So anything within Ukrainian airspace is up to Ukraine's own air force to shoot down.
We've seen the killing of a Russian general and a car bombing in Moscow. Are the strikes in retaliation for this, or do we know yet?
I don't think that we can say anything is in retaliation. You know, I think that whatever happened in Moscow yesterday, if indeed Ukraine was responsible, then that could be seen as retaliation for Russia's extremely horrific 4 years of full-scale invasion of Ukraine, and that anything Russia is doing is just a continuation of its original war aims, which is that it doesn't want Ukraine to pursue an independent future in the European Union. It wants to control all of Ukraine, although it sometimes suggests that it would be happy with just smaller portions of territory that it has not even conquered yet militarily. And so I think using that rhetoric of retaliation is something Ukraine is always reluctant to do, because they see all of their own counterattacks and defensive operations as a result of Russia's initial aggression.
While you're living the terrifying reality of war, talks between the US and Ukraine happened in Miami, separate talks on the sidelines between Russia and the US. How productive have they been?
It's really hard to say. I mean, we see the Americans and the Ukrainians saying that they were productive, but of course the obstacle here will always be Russia, and that Ukraine and the United States can get to an agreement on what they think is an appropriate way to end the war, but if Russia doesn't want to end the war, then the war won't end. No one started this war except for Russia, and only Russia can end it. So the idea that some of the topics being discussed that we're seeing, first of all, President Zelensky said yesterday that one of the main security guarantees would be a peacetime Ukrainian army that amounts to 800,000 soldiers. That will be unacceptable to Russia, which has said that it wants to completely minimize and reduce the size of Ukraine's military as part of any end to the war. Ukraine knows that its own military is its best security guarantee, especially since it's had to be so self-reliant during this war. And so probably Russia won't accept that. There's also the idea that the coalition of the willing, this is around 30 countries who have gotten together to agree to provide different forms of security for Ukraine, including potentially troops on the ground, in the sky, or at sea. And again, Russia has said that the presence of any foreign troops in Ukraine would not be acceptable to them. So all of these agreements, even if Ukraine and the United States are getting closer, the war is not between Ukraine and the United States. Russia is the enemy in this situation. And so it's very unclear that they would sign on to any of this.
Well, back to Kyiv, where you are now, the war is fast approaching the 4-year mark. What's the mood there as you head towards Christmas?
People are tired. Definitely the energy attacks are just relentless. And, you know, even though this is the season of lights and joy, you know, people are trying to carry on. You still see a lot of battery-powered lights and decorations on all of the restaurants. People are outside still spending time with friends and family. But of course, there's just the constant haunting of everyone who's not here, of the cemeteries full of soldiers and civilians killed during the war, of all of the people who will be missing from Christmas dinner tables. And of course, all of the soldiers who are still fighting on the front lines, separated from their families, missing their children's childhood memories of Santa coming on Christmas Day. So there's definitely just a lot of pain and loss that you feel palpably every day, but there's no sign in any way that Ukrainians would ever be willing to bow to Russia to end this war.
Siobhan O'Grady, Ukraine Bureau Chief with the Washington Post. Thank you. Take care and happy Christmas. It's now 8:24.